Welcome to the Sober Gay Sunday podcast, a podcast about being gay and sober and not just on Sundays. In this podcast, we'll explore the ins and outs of being queer and sober in a world where drinking and using is woven into the fabric of our culture. This season, we'll be hearing the stories of addiction and recovery from sober gays from all over the world. Every story of recovery is unique in its own way, and every story deserves to be heard. So let's go. In this episode, we welcome Rocco Steele. Rocco Steele is an internationally known porn star and business owner. He's celebrating 25 years of continuous sobriety. Please welcome Rocco.
Hey, Rocco, welcome to the pod.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Why don't we get started with you telling us your name, your preferred pronouns, and just a little bit about yourself.
My performer name is Rocco Steele. I go by he, him, his. Little about myself. Let's see. I've been in the industry, in the entertainment industry for, gosh, going on 10 years this May. It was all kind of by accident. I was living in New York City and just working a really kind of dead-end job and just hating it, and just decided no more. One day I woke up and I said no more. And I had answered some requests for like doing some film work for some studios in New York at the time that I had been saying no to for probably a couple years. It was really the last thing I ever wanted to do was get into adult entertainment. But I was kind of like, I was living in New York City, desperate to keep my apartment and my bills paid and all of that. So I just finally, I was like, you know, I have no other options. So I said yes. Mm-hmm. And I found that it was fairly lucrative. And I think looking back, it was kind of right place, right time for me. I was turning 50. I was probably one of the only older guys in the industry. Mm-hmm. There was kind of like a place for me. Yeah. And so I just kind of like had a very successful career in that industry for the last 9 years. I really only wanted to do it for 1 year max. Mm-hmm. And I kept getting pulled back into it. Every time I thought I would leave, something else, another project or something would be presented to me, and I would take the opportunity. And so here we are, 9 years, 9.5 years later. I really am looking at retirement soon. So fingers crossed. And I'm 25 years sober. I celebrated my 25th anniversary on December 9th. That has been an amazing journey. I'm sure you have other questions about it, so I'll just kind of leave it at that.
Absolutely. I mean, 25 years is incredible. I mean, I'm coming up. I just celebrated 3.5. So to hear, like, you know, how many years you have, it's just wild. It's crazy. It's crazy to me. It's great.
It's
great to see that.
I mean, I remember 3 years. I remember when I had 3 years, it was yesterday. So it just goes by so fast. Mm-hmm. One day at a time. And yeah. And I heard something very recently. I was in a meeting very recently. It was we were talking about anniversaries, and the person said that they had been told recently that it's not about the years, it's about the day. Like,
yeah,
I have, oh, I know what it was. I may have 25 years, so I'll say, apply it to me. I may have 25 years, but it doesn't mean anything if I don't have the day.
I love that.
It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
25 years, for some reason, I've never heard that.
And yeah.
It was just so, like, it made so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. It probably wouldn't have made sense to me 25 years ago if I was told that, but anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So let's take you, we'll start you off from, like, your first drinking and using experience, and then just kind of take us through your sober journey.
So when I think back, You know, there were times throughout my childhood, I grew up in a very drinky family. My father's side was all Italian. My mother's side was Irish. There was definitely alcoholics on my mother's side, not because she was Irish, just happened to be. And yeah, several alcoholics. Her father was an alcoholic, raging alcoholic. So there was lots of there was always alcohol around. We were a big we did lots of family gatherings and get-togethers, and I had a huge extended family. So there was always family around, whether it was the Italians or the Irish. There was always family around, and there was always alcohol was part of that. Not so much on the Italian side, but there was like wine, and you know, like my aunts would have, like, they would make like specialty drinks, I remember, on the holidays and stuff. But so growing up, I remember always wanting to like sip it, but a lot of kids do. So I wouldn't say that that's where it started. I would kind of, there's a situation that stands out in my mind, and it always has. And it was, my parents were divorced. They got divorced when I was 10. My father would pick me up and on the holiday, well, on Sundays, but then on Christmas as well. And my parents would take turns, and my father would take me in the early part of the day and take me to my grandma's house, my Italian grandma's house. And it was, I had like 8 aunts and uncles on that side. So lots of cousins, very festive. Holidays were very festive. I remember lots of glasses of wine and uncles drinking beer and smoking cigars. And my aunts had made like a specialty drink. It was, I remember that particular day they were making pink ladies, kind of appropriate that I was attracted to it so much. So I remember just drinking, like my dad would like, I'd be like, can I have a sip of your beer, Dad? He'd be like, sure. And he's not keeping count of how many sips I've had throughout the day. So I remember just wanting a lot. Like I would just try to get a little sip of this and a little sip of that. So it's really the first time it stands out in my mind of like wanting more, right? Like one sip wasn't enough. And I remember getting progressively drunker as a child. I was probably 12 years old, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
I got really sick. I went upstairs. We weren't allowed upstairs to the main floor of my grandma's house. She had a really small house, but we all had to stay in the basement, is where she had dinner. She had this giant like table. We all sat around. Nobody was allowed upstairs into like where her main living quarters were. Mm-hmm. But I got really sick, and I didn't want to like get sick in front of everybody. So I went upstairs, and I didn't make it to the bathroom. And I remember throwing up all over her kitchen.
Oh, no.
And I was in a lot of trouble. And anyway, that stands out as like my first probably drunk experience. And my first experience, like kind of seeing the ism there, right? Like wanting more and you know, one sip not being enough and all that stuff. So then it just kind of progressed. I didn't drink throughout my childhood. I didn't drink again on a consistent basis until I was in high school. It really started off at like all the high school, like senior parties. I realized that like, you know, if I drank, then I was like more accepted. And coming from like, I went to a very kind of affluent Catholic high school, but I was from the other side of the tracks. I was from like the working class Italian neighborhood. So like drinking and being accepted all of a sudden like reprogrammed me. And I was like, oh, if I drink, it levels the playing field. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these people accept me. So that kind of like carried over into college as well. I went to college. I pledged a fraternity. It was a very straight fraternity, as most of them were back then anyway. So I was kind of slowly eking out of the closet at that point, mm-hmm. but keeping my gay like outside of the fraternity house, right? Like, so, but when I drank, I fit right in with all my fraternity brothers, right? Like I was just another brother, and again, level playing field, I was accepted, all that stuff. So fast forward, just like throughout my adult life, like I moved to New York City after I went to law school, and then after law school, I moved to New York City. And but right around that time, I was really kind of out of the closet. I was newly out of the closet, like after law school. And when I moved to New York City, I was literally, you know, like a kid in a candy store. It was like
the
early 90s. I was just out, you know, and like living in the West Village in New York City, and just, it was like amazing. And I was supposed to be studying for the bar exam, right? So here I am, New York City, trying to study for the bar exam, going out all the time, experimenting with drugs, dating boys, and like whatever. So just, it wasn't a good mix. And I failed the bar exam twice. I studied for it a third time. My practice tests were miserable. So I ended up not taking it the third time. And then kind of at that point, it's like the mid 90s. And I'm like, my life is kind of spiraling. And I'm doing a lot of like cocaine with my drinking now. And the cocaine, of course, made my bottom happen a lot quicker. So long story short, I was working at a law firm. I was a paralegal. It was 1998. So several years now of just like, you know, on the loose in New York City, drinking, drugging, running around. And I would, my MO would be like, I had lots of straight girlfriends, like gal friends. I better not say girlfriends because I'll be accused of being bisexual, which I often am. Anyway, so I would go out to dinner like with a gal friend on a weeknight, and like specifically on this particular night, the last night of my drinking was I went out with my friend Amy. We'd go out every Monday night and we'd go to this Chinese restaurant that had all you can drink wine. And we would sit there and we'd have our dinner, but then we'd stay for hours and just drink wine. They'd bring pitcher after pitcher, and we would tip them like $20. Just to let us stay there and drink the unlimited wine, right? Like this is what we do every Monday night. Anyway, I would get really drunk. I'd say goodnight to Amy, and then I'd go back downtown to the village where I lived, and I'd stop off at like the Christopher Street bars, mm-hmm. and I'd get my drugs, and I would do my drugs and close the bar. And then this particular night, I went to the after hours sex club. It was close to my house. Everything was really close in the West Village back then. Mm-hmm. And I closed that place. It was 9 a.m. I was supposed to be at work at 9:30 a.m. I was like, I'm just going to run home, take a shower, and get to work. So I ran home, took a shower, and I come out of the shower, and I remember looking at my couch, and it looked so comfortable. And I was like, I'm just going to lay down, rest my eyes for a second. I did that, and I woke up. It's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I decided not to go to work that day. I didn't call in. I was freaking out. I just panicked. I was like, okay, I'm just going to like go to work tomorrow and hope everything's okay. I did. I went to work the next day. And thankfully, like nobody was looking for me that day. Like a lot of the attorneys were out of the office or something. It was just like a perfect storm. But I knew the jig was up.
Yeah.
Like I knew I could not continue this. Mm-hmm. So I went into my office, closed the door, called my friend Paul, who had already been sober. He was one of my running buddies in New York, but he had gotten sober 2 years before I did. So I called Paul. I was like, Paul, like, I'm done. Take me to a meeting, please, tonight. He's like, gladly. He took me to Perry Street, which is a very popular meeting in the West Village, New York City. After Perry Street, he took me to a diner. We sat at the diner. Back then, we didn't have cell phone. So we went to the payphone and called a guy who would then become my sponsor. That was December 9th, 1998. I've never looked back. I've never picked up a drink, never picked up a drug, no poppers, nothing for 25 years.
Wow.
That's my story.
Congratulations. That's incredible. So have you continued with AA since then? Have you been in the program for 25 years? Is that kind of one of your, is that your go-to?
Yeah, I don't, because I'm big on the traditions, I've already kind of outed myself. I belong to a 12-step program. I've always belonged to a 12-step program. So I have been very active in this 12-step program since day one. My sponsor was like extremely, extremely regimented, very strict. Meetings every day for the first 90 days, and then beyond, meetings every day, pretty much for my first year. So 12-step program, meetings, always a part of my life. For the next the entire time I was in New York City, continually, consistently went to meetings in New York. Belonged to my home group was a very big, very large gay group in New York City, in Manhattan. I was very active in the early years. And actually, when I was in my third year, I became the group chair, the overall group chair of that group, which was a big, big endeavor for having 3 years sober, because it was a huge meeting or a huge group. We had 12 meetings a week. So it was a lot to kind of oversee, but obviously, it wasn't all about me. It takes a village. So everybody did their thing, and it was good. So anyway, I did lots of service, mm-hmm. lots of service, sponsors, sponsees, chaired meetings. When I moved out of New York City and moved to DC with my, when I got married, my meetings were kind of fell off. And when I moved overseas, cause I've been overseas now for 4 years, my meetings also fell off, but I tried to stay close to the program as much as possible. My friends are only sober people. I mean, I do have friends from high school and college that I'm still close friends with, but like, kind of like the people I really kind of hang out with and talk to on a regular basis are all sober. And that's kind of how it's been. So like my very tight support network has always been sober. I've always made sure that I practiced the principles of the program, even when I wasn't like a meeting maker. But now I have found a meeting overseas. It's a meeting for expats. It's an online meeting for expats. And it's really kind of saved me, because I found it right around the time of my anniversary. Mm-hmm. And I was getting kind of squirrely, no cravings or anything, but just like squirrely, and needed something, and feeling really disconnected being overseas. And it just really was a godsend that I found this meeting. So I'm a big believer in 12-step programs and meetings, and I have not worked a perfect program over the years, but I believe in, you know, progress. Mm. It's not perfection, and trying to work the principles regardless the entire time.
Amazing. So when you entered the adult film industry, was it challenging to your sobriety? What was your experience like kind of taking your sobriety into the adult film industry? Because you kind of took off pretty big. So I can imagine it being trying, at least.
So when I first started, I had a friend in the industry who kind of brought me into the industry. I can't mention his name, but he's also in the program. So he kind of, it was kind of good to kind of have him there and to see him at, like, you know, now for the first time ever in my sobriety, I was now in bars and clubs. I had to be in bars and clubs, and I'd followed the suggestions up until that point, and had never really, unless like I was meeting like high school friends or something like that, but like gay bars and gay clubs were not for me. Mm-hmm. It's just my own experience. They're not for me. Yeah. So that kind of was a concern of mine. Mm-hmm. But having this friend who was also in the rooms helped. And then also, I would just, you know, I would practice all of the things that, like, you know, I was taught, all the tools that I was taught kind of like when I was a newcomer, like, you know, in the early days of doing this, I was bookending, like making a phone call to a friend or a sponsor saying, okay, I'm going to this bar at this time, and then I'll call you when I come out of the bar, type of thing. Making sure, just little things, making sure I ate before I went into the bar. Even though, like, I knew I didn't have the cravings anymore, and the last thing I really wanted to do was pick up a drug. It was really the furthest thing from my mind. But I was able to intellectualize the fact that, you know, there's a reason for this, you know, halt concept.
Yeah.
Just, again, practice the principles. Mm. Eat. Make sure that my sponsor in my early years, like, he said, if you're going to a restaurant and everybody else is having a drink, make sure, like, you order yourself, like, you know, a fun, fizzy little fruit drink or whatever. So, like, just so you felt like you had something. So I just make sure that, like, I had my, like, Diet Coke or whatever. And so, like, it turned out, like, it was very easy because I would see people get messy and it would just fill me with gratitude.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's so very early on. Luckily, I saw that. I was like, oh, this is what happens in bars and clubs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I was just so grateful that I could leave at, like, whatever, whenever my job was done, I'd walk out the door.
Thank you for tuning in to the Sober Gay Sunday podcast. Please come back next week for the conclusion of this incredible episode. Please take a moment to like, subscribe, share, and comment. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Sober Gay Sunday. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, stay sober, guys. I'm so sick of small talk, and tell me something, jaw dropping, hit me on the head with your biggest mistake.